Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I think even before the vote, the preliminary vote, I realised that those of us who've been asked to oppose the motion got our work cut out, especially in this forum. But anyway, we will do our best. At the risk of making our position worse at the outset, I concede that in certain circumstances there is a valid case for whistleblowing. When other remedies have failed and there is evidence of illegality or deceit or abuse of power, blowing the whistle can be justified. But not everyone who leaks a confidential document, or even $250,000, is entitled to call themselves a whistleblower. Many leak not to expose wrongdoing, but for political advantage, or because they disagree with a particular policy, or because they take a view that governments should not be in the business of keeping information secret. I see this as a problem for WikiLeaks, where genuine examples of whistleblowing are buried in an avalanche of confidential material which shows no abuse at all. I also agree that to hold government to account, the public needs to be properly informed. Most democracies have accepted the need for greater transparency and taken steps to give the public access to more information. In the UK, the passing of the Freedom of Information Act. With rather more government sucking of teeth, the growth of judicial review has also played a huge part in opening up the workings of British government, including the most secret. But what I want to argue here is that there are good reasons why governments wish, and indeed are duty-bound, to maintain confidentiality in some areas of their work. Freedom of information is not the same as an information free-for-all, and the right to know does not necessarily mean the right to know everything, all of the time. Here it's worth recalling the exemptions built into the Freedom of Information Act. These include national security, defence, international relations, and the formulation of government policy. These categories may be broad, and no doubt too much information is classified, but it is not too difficult to see why our security and defence will often depend on secrecy. Whenever we get on an aeroplane, we're generally reassured, if mildly irritated, by all the searching and baggage checking. But just as important to our safety is the work done by the security and intelligence agencies. Since 9/11, there's been only one terrorist attack in Britain, leading to major loss of life. But those agencies have prevented a number of other attacks, which, in one case at least, would have led to many more casualties than occurred in London on 7/7. The work of these agencies has to be secret. They cannot operate if their sources and methods are exposed to public view. One of the goals of diplomacy is to make the world a safer place. But to be effective, diplomacy too sometimes requires confidentiality. The leak of State Department cables.
You said diplomacy requires secrecy as well, and you worked at the UN. You mentioned WikiLeaks. Do you think the people in this room have the right to know that UN diplomats were being bugged by Americans and that Hillary Clinton said, get every information you can, including their air miles information? Do you think that was right, and you should have a right to know that?
There's quite a lot I could say about that, but I'll make one very short point here. I mean, I thought, frankly, that was a little bit absurd. Having worked at the UN, I know that if I want information from a UN employee, I go along and ask for it, and that UN employee normally gives me that information, plus a cup of tea and a biscuit. So I think they made fools of themselves over that. I entirely agree. But I think, I mean, you've picked out probably the only exception. The leak of the State Department cables has not shown the US government up to its neck in conspiracies and cover-ups. What has been revealed, by and large, is the normal traffic of diplomacy. Information that governments wish to keep confidential for the sake of their working relationships with other governments. Negotiating with other governments, finding the compromises which are the lifeblood of international relations, will always be more difficult if the bargaining process becomes public. At the UN Security Council, resolutions are voted in public. Their texts are public. Explanations of vote are public. But the negotiation itself takes place behind closed doors because fewer resolutions would see the light of day if that were not the case. Getting diplomatic context, to speak frankly, or advisers to give candid advice in the domestic arena depends on trust. When the lead Russian and American negotiators on the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty wanted to find a way through the difficulties they faced, they went for their famous walk in the woods. They may have needed the fresh air, but they also wanted the chance to talk frankly and to build trust. Trust and frank speaking are impossible if confidences and confidentiality cannot be respected. Without frank speaking, misunderstandings proliferate, and the quality of information on which governments must base their decisions deteriorates. Not, in my view, a recipe for a safer world. There are clearly two conflicting principles locking horns here. The public's need to be properly informed and thus able to hold governments to account, and the government's need to keep some aspects of what it does confidential to protect its citizens and to function effectively. There is no simple formula to resolve the conflict. But if the right balance is not being struck, the democratic way to address this is not by whistleblowing, even if, in some exceptional circumstances, it may be justified, still less by wholesale leaking. Instead, we should improve the democratic and constitutional processes by which the executive is held up to scrutiny. Parliament, the media, the courts, the rights enjoyed by individual citizens operating within a framework established by law. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.